Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Oh, what great music, and good luck. I intentionally wanted to open with that because good luck getting that song out of your head when you leave the theater where you have just seen the record-breaking musical spectacular Cats. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber's show back in Chicago through August 4th. You don't want to miss it. Hi, everybody. It's Paul Lesnick. Welcome to Behind the Curtain podcast this week. And joining me is the actor who plays Grizabella, the cat that gets to sing the most beautiful song in Cats called Memory. We might share a little bit of that with you later. But she is Carrie Renee Fuller. She plays Grizabella. She's in Chicago. Carrie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I think what's interesting is the first time I saw Cats, you probably were not even alive yet, and because I did see it back in 1982 on Broadway and many times since then. Just give me your impression. You've got this amazing role in a show that has been out since 1982. What's it like? Do you find that people are coming over and over again like me who have seen it? Or I think with the new choreography, you're reaching a new audience.
You know, we actually have quite a good balance, but my favorite occurrence of people that have seen the production before is, you know, grandmothers or mothers, previous generations that have seen Cats when they were younger that are now bringing their children to see Cats for the first time. So they're still getting the quintessential Cats experience that everybody did in the 80s and the 90s, but now here in 2019 with our production, with Andy Blankenbuehler's refreshed choreography, they're really getting a fresh contemporary take on the 80s classic.
That is very true, and I got to tell you, so I had not properly done my homework before I saw the show because I said, well, I know Cats, so I don't really need to. And then as I'm watching it, I'm going, wait a minute, orchestra, choreography, this is not the same show. I mean, it is the same show as far as the overall production, but I'm having a different experience, and so I was right.
Yes, you are correct. Your gut was correct. Yeah, most of the choreography is pretty much the same. It has just been evolved for a more contemporary audience with a more, you know, refreshing take of somebody, you know, that choreographed Hamilton, just a very guttural take on the choreography, which is extremely fun to do, at least from my experience.
Too bad they didn't know what they were doing with Hamilton, right?
I know, what a shame. Goodness, nobody ever sees that.
So you might or might not know this. I'd be curious. So what's really fun about this, if I'm giving it away, I'm giving it away. But when you go to see Cats, which you should over at the Niederlander Theater, try and get an aisle seat because various points throughout the we can tell people what happens, right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, because you may just have a kitty cat come down the aisle that kind of sings to you on your way up, but not you. Your role is kind of too important. You don't get to make those kinds of appearances.
I only have an exit through the audience here at the Niederlander. I do. Now, let's see. This is a quiz for you. When you saw the opening number the other night, did you? You might have seen me because I am actually dancing in the opening number. Not as iconic Grizabella that we all know, but we call her Baby Grizz, and they wanted to make sure, because back in the original productions, the Grizabella actually did dance in the opening number. It was only in the revivals that she did not, and so Chrissy Cartwright, who was our associate director on this project, that actually worked hands-on with Gillian Lynn in the original productions, she was like, let's go back to the roots and let's have Grizabella and Rum Tum Tugger and Old Deuteronomy and even Gus the Theater Cat, we're all in different costumes, but we are dancing in the opening number.
Well,
so I do get to go out during Naming of Cats.
Okay.
I get to say hi to a couple of people.
So you know what? I can't pretend to say that I noticed that because I didn't, and that's fantastic. That's really great to know.
Right.
And now I need to see it again so I can watch that. But here's trivia for you. When I first saw it in 82, do you know that they had seats on stage? So I sat on stage, and the cast.
Whoa.
So I was part of, you know, the set, so to speak, not alone, but several people on stage. And so the cats would always, they didn't go through the audience at that time, but they came up to us, the people who were on stage. And I mean, all
wow.
throughout the show, even waiting to go on for a number, they would kind of stand next to you and purr and play with you. And I love that.
Oh, wow. See, I knew that the original production back in London was in the round. It was an immersive production. I don't think I was completely aware that people were actually sitting on stage as audience members. That's really
yeah.
cool.
Oh, it was really, maybe I wasn't supposed to. No, I was kidding. I was. So listen, there, it's hard to imagine that, you know, people don't know the show because, again, it's been around for so long and it's such an iconic classic show. However, there is something some people don't know, so I'll have you explain it. I just had a discussion the other day here in the newsroom with somebody who said, well, the thing is, Cats doesn't have a plot. I like a show with a plot. And I said, Cats does have a plot. And
it
so
does.
What's your view? Because I think it does.
You know, I think it's actually so, so funny because I'm actually one of those actors. I like to read reviews. I don't take them to heart or anything, but I just love seeing what people publish about our production. And it's so funny because several reviews that I have read, and even in this city as well, they have gone on to say, Cats does not really have a plot, but then they will sum up the production.
Right.
They will sum up as a plot. And so I just think that is very interesting because it does not have like this incredible deep plot with like all of these different climactic deep moments. It is literally a night out of the year that a tribe of cats gets together and essentially presents themselves to hopefully be reborn in a new life. And it is only Grisabella, the story of Grisabella, rather, that infuses that very basic but quite straightforward plot with the story of redemption and therefore giving it a much more deep and emotional meaning, which is why everybody is always emotional during the Song of Memory. They didn't just get there because the song is that good. It is incredibly good. But that song would not be as climactic if we hadn't already been through the journey that we had been through in Act 1 and half of Act 2.
Now, have you ever read T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats, which is kind of the script for this?
Yeah, and it's so funny because Grisabella actually isn't in that. And so anytime all of these, like, a beautiful, beautiful people bring that book to the stage door for us to sign, I'm like, so where do you want me to sign? Grisabella doesn't have a poem in here.
I love it. So you sign next to Old Deuteronomy if you have to.
Yeah, I'll sign at Old Dude or next to the, you know, the theme of Jellicle Cat.
Right. Oh, by the way, that you just triggered another memory. So back when I first saw it in the 80s, not only did we sit on stage, but Old Deuteronomy hung around through the intermission and we could go talk to him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he actually
he does stay there for a while.
That. Yeah, when we first started the tour, our old Deuteronomy actually did stay on stage the entire intermission.
Oh,
but
well,
we found that the audience was not respecting the no flash rule.
Oh,
and also it is extremely hot in that costume for old. He's essentially wearing a shag carpet, and so we created Andy was really ingenious in that he created a moment for Old Deuteronomy at the very end of Act 1, where he is the last person on stage, and then he is also the first person on stage at the beginning of Act 2.
Right.
So it creates an illusion that he's there, or at least his presence is there, the entire time of intermission.
And I love the way this concept of immersive theater, as you kind of called it, really still plays true because, again, it's not just the cats coming down the aisle, but the whole theater is part of the stage because, and I won't get into all the details, but even the way Old Deuteronomy enters, the point is the theater is your stage.
Yes. It's essentially like the theater is our junkyard and the humans are essentially
junk
coming into our, No, but the humans are coming into kind of our territory. Cats, by nature, are very territorial animals. So it makes sense that we would use the entire theater as kind of, like you said, our stage.
The way you take on Grisabella, I have to say, having seen Betty Buckley do it initially in the role that, I'm fairly sure that's the role that kind of catapulted her into her stardom, you play it differently. Now, I don't know that you ever saw a tape of her doing it or anything like that, but have you?
I never saw her perform it. I actually have never seen Cats live. I grew up watching the film, of course, like most kids in the cast my age, you know, growing up watching the video. I of course will never be the same as the Grisabellas who have come before me, because I'm much younger than they are, and I have to just, from the experiences that I've had in my life, I've not experienced life the way they have at that particular point in their career. And so for me, I have to draw from very different emotional recalls or very different memories and very different parts of points in my life where I have felt betrayed or where I have felt outcast or, you know, without a family, without a home. So it's definitely the struggle of finding your footing as opposed to, oh, my glamorous life was so wonderful, you know?
And I agree with you. And the thing is, because you're right, Betty Buckley, and relatively speaking, were older than you, and the other people I've seen it are older than you. So I guess that's part of the reason I feel your take is different, because you don't get to play it as the aging cat who's seeking for that new life from old Deuteronomy. You, and again, I actually don't necessarily remember this, but you see the other cats kind of not being nice to you in here, and that may or may not happen in the Grisabellas I saw, I don't recall, but it's almost as though your issue is more about bullying and the way you've been treated than it is about being the old cat that has just washed up.
Yeah, I think that it has a lot to do with that as much as, and what I'm also trying to portray is that, I mean, anybody who comes to see the show has had moments in their life that they're not particularly proud of, and for myself, going into Grisabella, I am drawing more on those, like things that I would consider, you know, possible regrets or things that I would, you know, probably go back and maybe do a little differently, or, you know, things in my life where I didn't fully understand the consequences that it would have, you know, for other people that I loved or things like that. And so I think she completely understands that she is, you know, not been her best self, but she wants to do better, and that is why she wants a new life. She doesn't want to live life again so she can be glamorous again. For me, she wants to live life again so she can do it better.
So, as you know, I have to ask you, I don't know if people are getting you on this yet, but of course, the movie comes out this Christmas. The trailer is out. I tell you, most people in my life are getting a little freaked out by the trailer. I don't know why, but they're looking. I think they prefer actors in cat costumes rather than Jennifer Hudson being a cat with the face being Jennifer. I don't know. But
I feel like that is the common
concern?
Problem, I guess. Concern, yes, is the human faces.
It doesn't bother me. I think it's cool. It's a movie, right? So
it's
why
going
not?
To be so fun. I'm so excited to
so
see
there
it.
You are. You are sandwiched in between Betty Buckley, icon of Broadway, Jennifer Hudson, icon of everything else, and there you are in between them. Is that a burden? It goes to show the importance of your role and what you do and how magical that must be for you as a young actor who's taking on this role.
I mean, it is incredibly intimidating. I'm not going to lie to you. Even before the movie was even fully announced that Jennifer Hudson was going to be playing Grisabella, it's already a very intimidating role just because of what it is. Just because Memory is probably the most covered musical theater song in history. And it is so beautiful and so guttural and so raw and vulnerable that to go there every night, it takes a toll. And it's not particularly, I mean, it is a difficult song to sing, don't get me wrong, but if you were just singing it you know, singing it, it wouldn't be as hard as when you're infusing it with as much emotion as the song requires and also singing it.
And when I saw you opening that, you brought the house down. Am I right in assuming that you can be honest, I know this, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I'm guessing when you do that number on a nightly basis, because you do pause there for a while, you know you're going to bring the house down, right?
I definitely, I remember, this is a throwback to when we opened back in Providence, Rhode Island. I have never been in this position before. I've had, of course, you know, like different leads in different regional theater productions and collegiate productions that, you know, have had a profound effect. But nothing like what I experienced that opening night of our preview will ever come close. I remember standing there and not really knowing what was going to happen. I wasn't sure how people were going to react. And all of a sudden, like, this thunderous applause happens, and I just start hyperventilating on stage because I was so excited to be there and so blessed that it worked, and I was just so grateful. And it never ceases to amaze me how generous the audiences are with that moment.
It's magical.
And
when it does go on and the other cats... When the other cats kind of move back into place, I think if I was playing your role, I'd turn to them and say, get off the stage for a minute. Give me my moment.
I actually don't know what I would do without my castmates on stage at that point, because making eye contact with them and that receiving line at the end, there have been numerous nights that for whatever reason I've been, you know, particularly emotional. That song has a way of doing that to you. And just linking eyes and hands with my castmates has truly been my backbone.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing show. And again, if you've seen Cats in the past, or you haven't seen Cats in the past, it really doesn't matter, because you don't want to miss this production. It's a new experience. And I do actually, I can tell you so many people who I know who some had never seen it. One was so enamored with it that she's coming again. Somebody else doesn't like cats, so she didn't want to come. Not the show, the animal. And so she went to see it and she fell in love with it. So it's just such magical performances and such incredible characters. And I'm so happy I got to talk to you, because your character is so critical to the show, and you do such a magnificent job that I want to congratulate you for it. And I can remember I got emotional just watching you do it, because I've seen that number. I know it's coming, and then you do it such justice. And if you don't get to see Carrie do it, then you know what? Go online, WGNTV.com, because you did perform it on our morning show, a part of it anyway, and we can catch a moment of it there. In fact, if we're going to go out playing a little bit of Memory, if you don't mind, I wish it was you singing it, but I don't have that track. I have some other woman who did this role sometime in the past.
She might have won a Tony. Who knows?
She might have won a Tony. I really don't know. It's all about you now. So I encourage everybody to check out Cats. It's at the Niederlander Theater, formerly the Oriental, by the way. I don't know if you know that. It just changed names. And it's playing through August 4th. BroadwayInChicago.com is where you can get tickets. I love Broadway in Chicago. Oh, everything is so magical about it. And I was so thrilled to see it coming back. Here's a little bit of Memory from an earlier version of the show Cats. And we turn from the magic of Broadway to the magic of what goes on in Washington, D.C. It was a powerful week with Robert Mueller testifying before two congressional committees controlled by Democrats, the Judiciary, the Intel, concerned about whether the president did, in fact, obstruct justice, and talking about Russian intervention in our 2016 election, what we can look for ahead. I'm joined by Brad Bannon, Democratic strategist and the president of Bannon Communications Research. Brad, it's good to see you. What did Democrats accomplish with Robert Mueller testifying for them?
Well, thanks for having me on the show again, Paul. What did Democrats accomplish? Well, I think what Democrats accomplished was not as much as they wanted to, but they did accomplish something important, which was to get Robert Mueller on live TV and basically document a lot of the facts that they were in that were in his report. You know, I mean, essentially, Americans got to watch live Robert Mueller say, in his opinion, that Donald Trump, when he asked his special counsel, his White House counsel, Don McGahn, to fire him, that Mueller believed that was obstruction of justice. And it didn't cause all the hoopla the Democrats wanted. But it documented the facts that will prove useful to the Democratic presidential candidates next year.
You know, and we covered the hearings wall to wall here on WGN, and my comments were in line with what you've said. But I also essentially said, after having watched it, impeachment is the more immediate inquiry. It doesn't look like Democrats are going to go there or inclined to go there. And after all that has alleged to have happened, with Republicans playing it the way they've played it, do you find it interesting, Brad, as a Democratic strategist, that it looks like the only chance Democrats have for making any adjustment in this entire thing is 2020 election?
Well, yeah, after all the fuss about impeachment, it is. But, you know, I think there are a couple of things to keep in mind. But first of all, most Americans, if you look at the national polls, believe that President Trump behaved inappropriately in trying to obstruct Robert Mueller's investigation. Two, despite the fact that most Americans feel the president did behave inappropriately, they've sent a message loud and clear to Democrats in Congress that voters want to make the decision themselves whether or not Donald Trump should remain in office, and they'll make it next year. And honestly, I think that's the big reason why most Americans, even though they believe that Trump behaved badly, don't want to impeach him, because Americans feel they have the right to make that decision themselves next year and don't want members of Congress to make it for them.
Well, back in the 1990s, Bill Clinton was impeached. Congress decided they would make that decision, and then the Americans, the voters, stepped in, and guess what? They kept Bill Clinton around. There's nothing to say that Donald Trump won't be kept around.
Well, they may very well be, but there's one big difference between Bill Clinton's situation and Donald Trump's. In the wake of impeachment, Bill Clinton's top performance rating was in the high 60% range. I believe it got up to 68% at one point soon after his impeachment. Donald Trump's approval rating, the last time I checked on Gallup, was 43%.
So as you look ahead, if you were advising Nancy Pelosi, are you in accord with basically saying, look, you know, I think they all wanted a chorus to come from Mueller that was essentially, that, as you just said, one could play in all the campaign ads and everything else. They didn't really get it from Mueller. In fact, when somebody would say, Mr. Mueller, why don't you read that to us? He would say, why don't you read it? So really, you have congressmen, you know, making the argument, and ads are too complex to start just saying, and look what the Republicans did. They basically, you know, stood up for Donald Trump. And it's funny, CNN ran a segment where they basically showed how many Republicans were parroting Sean Hannity talking points, literally word for word and issue by issue as they walk through it. I know some would call that biased and it's fake news and everything else, but it was an interesting thing to watch actual video where Sean Hannity says, here's what I'd ask. And then here's the Republican congressman asking that same question over and over and over again, by the way.
Well, obviously, it was a very partisan hearing. I think the way to describe what happened yesterday, Democrats behaved like they were in a courtroom. Republicans behaved like they were on a Jerry Springer show. But the reality is there is going to be no impeachment. And Americans want to make that decision for themselves. And the other factor, the other reason why there's no public demand for impeachment, or little public demand for impeachment, is Americans have bigger fish to fry than impeachment. They are very concerned about their ability to weather a health care crisis. Many voters, especially in the industrial Midwest where Trump won last time are still unhappy and feel a large degree of economic uncertainty. And the reality is there are more important things going on in Americans' lives than what's going on in Washington. They want an answer to their health care crisis. They want a vibrant economy where you don't have to work two or three jobs to make a living. And, you know, that's why there's so little public support for impeachment, is voters have bigger things on their minds than people in Washington have.
Brett, are you being a good Democrat and putting a lot of spin on this? Or is there some level to which you feel you really were disappointed by how things played out in the hearings?
Well, yeah. Honestly, my personal opinion, I think Donald Trump deserves to be impeached. I think it's pretty clear that based on our Mueller's testimony yesterday, Donald Trump committed high crimes and misdemeanors. But the reality is there is going to be no impeachment. The public doesn't want it. And even if the House voted to impeach, the president would be acquitted in the Senate because you need 67 votes to throw out a president. And there are only 48 members, Democratic members of Congress. So, yeah, I'm disappointed because I don't think Donald Trump, it deserves to be in office. I think he demeaned the dignity of the office, will have long-term sorrowful consequences for Americans, but it's not going to happen. So it's time for Democrats to move on to the big issues that voters do care about and fault the president for not coming up with a solution to the health care crisis facing this country, not providing an increase for troubled American families or still having troubles making ends meet. Those are the issues that are important to voters, and those are the issues that should be important to Democrats.
Looking ahead to the next set of Democratic debates that are coming up very soon, listen, the polls show Joe Biden is the one that many voters seem to think can do the job. He didn't perform very well in the first set of debates in Miami. Apparently, he says, oh, no, now look out. He's going to, you know, kind of throw some punches here. What are your expectations for the upcoming debates?
Well, I think the debates will be more combative than the first debates, other than the exchange on race between Senators Harris and Vice President Biden. The first round of debates were pretty tame. But the dynamics of the race have changed a lot since the first debate. Before the first debate, you really had two candidates out in front and were favorites, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Now you have four Democratic candidates within spitting distance of each other, Biden, Sanders, and Senators Harris of California and Warren of Massachusetts. So it's a four-way fray now, not a two-way fray. And I suspect some of the candidates who aren't on the among the four in the leaderboard are starting to feel very desperate and will take shots at the top four.
There are people like Bill Maher, the comedian, and others who you know, and I say that because he's certainly a very progressive, liberal Democrat, is I think the way he would identify. And a lot of people say if Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders gets the nod, Trump will win 48 states. My question to you is, do they have a good chance because there is no more of an antidote to 4 years of Trump, just as some would say there was no more of an antidote to 8 years of President Obama, they could be the antidote? Or do you look and say Democrats better be careful? If they give Trump his socialist talking point, they're toast.
Well, first of all, I think it's a mistake to lump Sanders and Warren together.
Okay, fair enough. Well, they do compete with each other for the same vote, but okay.
The difference is that Elizabeth Warren goes out of her way when she's detailing her very comprehensive fundamental plans for reform to argue that she is a capitalist who wants to make the capitalist system work better. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. And even though many Democrats, in fact, most Democrats are operationally socialist and believe in socialist programs, they are philosophically capitalist. And I think of Sanders as an avowed socialist is in a worse position than Elizabeth Warren, who simply wants to make the capitalist system works better. So I think Sanders would put Democrats in a dangerous position, and I don't think that's true of Warren.
Is Joe Biden still the safest bet?
He is the safest bet, but the reality is, if you look at the top four candidates, there are two on the upswing and two on the downswing. The two candidates on the upswing are Warren and Harris, and the two candidates on the downswing are Sanders and Biden. And if Sanders and Biden don't do anything to reverse their fortunes, they're going to be in trouble.
And by the way, let me just get a quick take from you on Mayor Pete Buttigieg, because in the polls, he's polling at, you know, negligible numbers with African-Americans. He seems to come in around fifth or so in these polls. And yet on the money front, he's got support. It's as though people love him, but don't think he can win.
Well, yeah, I think the reality is you're right. Mayor Pete has raised more money than any of the other Democratic candidates, including Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, but he lags in the polls. And I don't think the money is – he has to find a way to make that money put him into the top four. Otherwise, he's going to continue to fade away.
All right, we're going to see how it all plays out in the debates. Coming off of the Mueller testimony, which seems to be now in the past in terms of even its utility for Democrats and, of course, Republicans – like to think they're riding a high wave. It'll all play out. We'll continue to analyze it with you as time goes on. Brad Bannon, a Bannon Communications Research Democratic strategist. Thanks for your insight, my friend. See you on Politics Tonight in an evening soon.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.